Good afternoon and welcome to our virtual meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on November 16th, 2021, and time to reconvene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. In accordance with Governor's Proclamation 20-28.15, we are holding meetings remotely. In the meeting, we have Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Ann Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off cameras on your devices when not speaking. We'll ask for questions or comment on agenda items as each item is discussed. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Some questions can be answered during the meeting, while others may require more time. Please indicate you'd like to speak by clicking raise hand, or if joining by telephone, dial *9, and I'll call on you to speak at the appropriate time. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the published agenda?
Mr. President, under items for individual consideration, two claim settlements are included as under 5C and 5D.
Okay, and I'll add item 3B, add places, amended bid report cover sheet, amended bid report emergency declaration. Okay. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, state and spell your name and indicate where you are from. Comments from the public is item 2 on today's agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first up is item 2, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please state your first and last name for the record. So please raise your hand if you're joining us today and would like to speak. I'm seeing no hands up. We will move to item 3, our consent agenda. A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of November 2nd, 2021. B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Okay. Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any comments from the public. Are there any questions or comments from you, commissioners?
I have one, just a minute, I'm trying to get to the, on the AE professional services for the North County Community Office. Just wondering what, says the amendment modifies the contract scope to include the design of project program additions. So I was just wondering what those are. And the addition of fire protection engineering professional services. So I had a question about that too, but first maybe somebody could answer, what are the program additions? And I guess Jessica Robb is the project leader on this.
Hi, yes. So to answer your question, so the fire protection services, we are having a fire protection engineer take a look at all of the buildings and making sure that we meet all the requirements, not only for fire code, but for insurance purposes, and just making sure that we are able to really dig into the fire protection needs for the facility. Since we've got, you know, with the warehouse, we have different items in there. We want to make sure that we're adequately protecting our facilities in regards to fire protection.
Okay, and the other part is the design of project program additions.
Sure, so I think in our update we had, I guess it's been about a month ago, we went through and talked a little bit about those additions that were made by our advisory team group of folks that we pulled from around the district to just work with us to make sure that we still had the right scope of work, that we were still providing everything that was needed by our, for operations, for customers. And so there were a few things that were added as part of the scope that we originally didn't have. So for example, we added some additional covered parking just because we have more vehicles and things we need covered. We added, now of course everything's, I'm going blank, covered parking. We have additional electric vehicle charging for the public. And just some, and I'm happy to share that presentation again, for sure. And that lists some other things as well. But yeah, that's what that is really is.
Okay, maybe if you could send that to Allison, I'm just interested.
Of course.
I'm not critical of it. It's the Third Amendment. And I know that this whole project is ongoing and growing, and so it's no surprise that this is a Third Amendment, but just like to know. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. The questions, commissioners, comments?
This Commissioner Olson, on the, the RFP for Managed Detection and Response Services. Like it a lot. But I do have a question on the selection criteria, great, but I didn't see, which I'm sure was part of that, examples of where this consultant has worked with other utilities on similar services.
Are you talking about Haven Site Consulting?
Well, the award was to Critical Insight.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So my question is, typically we do research in terms of where they have worked similar projects, and I didn't see anything cited here that research was done.
Christy, do you have an answer for us?
Yes. Hi, I'm Christy Sterling. I'm senior manager in IT of the application group. And that is an excellent question, Commissioner. I do know that Kevin did and the team did careful research, but I can't tell you today which additional companies that they looked at. I'm happy to get that information and bring it back to you.
But I don't want to hold up the award for it. I know that those things are kind of included, but typically we'll get a little bit of, you know, a one sentence on to assure us that we're not a beta site.
Absolutely, and point well taken. That's information that we should have included in this.
As far as
the detail of where they did.
I don't want to hold it up. It was just a question.
Yeah, excellent question. And definitely will share that information with you. I do know that Kevin and the team looked carefully at this particular solution to ensure that it would adequately meet our needs in relation to our mitigation for cybersecurity monitoring.
Okay. This is Kevin Johnston. Can you guys hear me now?
Oh, there you are, Kevin. Thank you.
Yeah. So my apologies. I attempted to raise my hand and jump in at first mention, but yes, we did do additional research with peer utilities and other like-sized organizations. This is a well-respected firm in this field.
Okay. Yeah.
And we feel confident that they can provide these services.
Thank you.
Any other questions, commissioners, or comments on the consent agenda?
No, I have none.
Okay, hearing no more, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 4, public hearing 4A, continuing our public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget. I will now convene a public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget. And we have Sarah Bond here who will facilitate the presentation and discussion. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Afternoon. Let me make sure I have control here. Looks like I do. Well, I'm glad to be here today. This is the second of our public hearings for the 2022 budget. Today, we're going to focus on our a five-year financial and reserves forecast for the electric system, and then I'll also be talking about the water system. So this presentation begins with, we just want to kind of get some context into what a five-year forecast is intended to do. And it's intended to make sure that we're promoting long-term financial stability and providing the district protection from potential risk. So there's kind of three categories. One is our long-term financial goals. So first of all, we want to make sure that we're providing adequate support to provide growth and reliability. So we're ensuring that we're funding our maintenance of our programs the way we need. We want to ensure that we have reasonable rate increases. We want to make sure that we're maintaining adequate reserve levels to help mitigate long-term risk. And we also want to make sure that we're helping to support the district's long-term strategic priorities. So these are some of the financial goals that we have in the five-year forecast. We have some strategies in place, and you've heard Scott and John talk about these throughout the budget process. Some of the things that we can do to control the forecast is we can manage our rate strategies, we can incorporate cost management strategies, and we can look at bond and other financing opportunities. So these are some of the tools that we have to mitigate some of our other things that we're seeing in our forecast. And I know you've heard, we've been talking a lot about, you know, what we have a different risk environment in this forecast than we have in previous forecasts. Obviously, the pandemic has changed things, and among other things, but some of the risks that we are considering, we've talked a little bit about supply chain issues. There's a lot of volatility out there that's impacting our budget. We're considering that there might be issues with labor pipeline down the road. There's definitely been some market volatility with some prices. There's risk of our generation and water supply. Climate impacts, we've been seeing that the last few days. So a lot of wild cards out there right now that we're facing in our current five-year forecast.
You know, what's interesting to me is that under the current risk environment, those risks, except for generation and water supply, well, that might be somewhat true, but all of those apply straight up to the federal level.
Absolutely.
I mean, as I've followed the news, I mean, it's like a cascading effect, I guess, or maybe going the other direction, but
agreed.
Just an observation. I hope you don't mind my just expressing that. It's really interesting though.
I agree with you. So next slide we wanted to do is talk a little bit about the five-year forecast connects a lot of things across the district. One of the things which I believe you'll hear about today is the IRP. So this five-year forecast that you're seeing is consistent with what you've seen in the IRP. And there's several different ways in which it touches. So for example, energy efficiency, you've heard that this is really our long-term low-cost resource. This is incorporated into our five-year budget. Energy storage, our forecast includes some consulting support for energy storage to look at future energy storage opportunities. Demand response, so we're funding staff support to help provide a pipeline so we can look at future larger scale projects. And then market capacity projects. So market purchases include funding for market capacity products. Which will help bridge resources until we can develop these products at scale. So there's definitely a linkage between the IRP and our five-year budget. Additionally, there's, and this is probably one of the things I like the most about this part of my job is really I get to be part of a lot of different processes where they do long-term planning, where it all kind of comes together in this product. So we've got quite a few plans and I'm not even showing them all. These are some of the larger ones. System planning group does an extensive capital planning process, and those assumptions are incorporated into our capital budget. Obviously, the load forecast, which you receive from Brian and his group, is a large, very large part of this five-year forecast. I've already talked about the integrated resource plan. And as you know, the district's working on a long-term strategy project. The ultimate goal is for there to be some significant linkages between that work and the budget. So these are just a few of the plans that are incorporated. Now, of course, a lot of the departments and other areas have other plans that are incorporated into this long-term plan. So I get the pleasure of looking them all and putting it all together and telling you the story.
Mr. Olson here with just an observation. This slide alone expresses to me the complexity of our industry and the complexity of our operations and how they individually tell a certain story, but they must come together and be cohesively linked. So, when I saw this reviewing the packet, I just thought, wow, what a great statement in terms of understanding how complex this industry is.
Mm-hmm. There's absolutely a significant amount of behind the scenes work that goes into putting it together.
I agree that it's a good kind of a quick and easy, comprehensible look at the complexities, as you were saying, Commissioner Olson. It's really, very interesting observation.
So now I'm going to walk through a few of some of the assumptions that are built into the forecast. Some of these I did touch on in my previous presentation. This will maybe be a little more detailed, but we'll start with our retail sales, our revenues. This is the most recent load forecast from the load group. It was just updated in September, so it's really recent. So it has our most recent projections for growth. The biggest thing is we are expecting some growth in our residential loads in the forecast. As I mentioned last meeting, we are continuing to provide funding for the income qualified discount program. And we've also discussed previously that we have some placeholders for some small multi-year rate increases subject to board approval. And we range from about 1.5 to 2.1% in the forecast years. Our wholesale sales revenues, as we discussed before, they're based on our P35 hydrology. They are expected to be higher than we previously forecast. Our purchases will be offsetting that a little bit too, because those are also expected to rise, but we are expecting some increases in our wholesale sales in the five-year forecast. Our other operating revenues, just a few things to touch on. We are expecting that our miscellaneous service charges for late and reconnection fees will return to normal levels by 23. They've been a little bit lower than normal because of the pandemic. And also our residential exchange credits, we're expecting higher residential exchange credit in the first 2 years of the forecast. But we do project that to return to lower historical levels in 24 and 26. That's still to be determined based on how our financials turn out at the end of those years. Other funding sources, we are currently assuming a $60 million bond issue in 2022. And that's in addition to the issue that we did this year in 2021. Looking at our purchase power, so in 2022, we're expecting relatively flat BPA power this October 21. And the forecast years have some small BPA increases built in. Generation system, we don't have any major projects in the forecast year, so we expect relatively stable generation system costs. Our market purchases are expected to remain higher than we've been seeing historically, and this is due to both increases in volumes and prices. And we discussed earlier the offset that we're seeing in the market revenues. And then we're also expecting a little bit of purchases of renewable energy credits, and those will begin in 2024. Looking at our transmission and ancillary, which is part of our O&M, we really don't have anything big in there. They're really expecting just some pretty small rate increases of about 2% in October 21 and some small increases in the forecast years. Another part of our operation and maintenance is energy efficiency. So we do have a five-year budget from the Energy Efficiency Group that is incorporated into this forecast. And this is funding for them to continue and to promote new energy efficiency programs and meet their targeted goals. Our other operating and maintenance, done some work to really improve our forecasting. So we're looking very specifically at different projects so that we can give them a more accurate inflation based on what we're seeing in the market today. And the other thing that we're starting to see in this forecast are some cost savings related to the Connect Up implementation. So there was a discussion earlier today that you saw about the meter readers, for example, that has been incorporated into this presentation, into our forecast. Lastly, on capital, we're expecting our major expansion, kind of our core capital upgrade projects, to be funded between $60 and $73 million a year, which is in line with our historical spending. We have our Connect Up project in this forecast, which is beginning next year substantially and then continues into 2025. And the facilities group is also gonna be pretty busy with finishing the North County Community Office, some other facility upgrades, and some operations center improvements. So this is a look at our five-year forecast with the numbers. Since I've walked through them all, I won't spend a lot of time on the slide unless there's specific questions. But you can see we've got growth in both our revenues and our operating expenditures. Capital is where we see some of the largest spending. We've got quite a bit on the table, as we just discussed, which is one of the reasons why we're considering a potential $60 million bond issue next year to help fund it. Some of the larger dollars in here for Connect Up project, which we've discussed. And then here we've also showing where our revenue fund is expected to end up at the end of the five-year period.
This is Commissioner Olson. I have a question on this slide. Is just a little different than I'm used to in terms of presentation of the data, even from last year, but we're saying that for the forecasted years that we are looking at each year small rate adjustments. Okay. And beyond the $60 million for next year, I thought that previously we were presented with a projection of additional issuance of bonds in a certain year. Is this on here and I just can't find it?
That is not included in here, but right now the assumption is $60 million in 2022. That's the only bonds in this five-year forecast. And that's in addition to what we issued in 2021, which was—
Okay, So you're not anticipating going to the market in those projected years?
Yeah, right now our placeholder is in 2022, and we'll be taking a look at that as we kind of get into the year.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if you can go that long. Anyway, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sarah, let me just make a really quick comment. Last year we saw 3 years worth. We combined and front loaded a little bit because the market was so good, and now we've got a placeholder for next year. So, Commissioner Olson, you may be remembering last year showed 3 potential years. We've kind of dropped it down to 2. Okay. And I'll even say that the one that we've got projected for next year is a placeholder.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that we are 100% on it yet, because it just kind of depends on how the reserves and the market shake out.
Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Sarah, if you go back to that slide, it shows a whole—
Sorry.
That's okay. Wholesale sales look like they're actually declining. I thought you'd said just moments ago that they're increasing. Is that—
Well, they're increasing from current year. So we're historically have been around mid-30s. So the next few years, we're definitely expecting some increases. Yeah, it does look like it's going to go back down in 25 and 26 based on their current projections. But compared to our history, they're quite a bit higher than we've seen.
Okay. Okay, I understand. And then on the revenue fund reserves, how does that compare to our board policy? What's the current number our board policy would say as a minimum?
Yeah, I can take a stab at that. And if you get too much feedback here, please let me know. I'm in a noisy spot. You may recall from last year, we had to move some money between the debt management reserve and the revenue fund. Technically speaking, both of those are operating reserves, but we're really targeting 120 days in the revenue fund specifically. And so the idea is park the debt management reserve, peg it for those future instances where maybe the market moves away and you want to use it for instead of capital financing. And then the revenue fund is the 120 day target. 120 days is probably in the 120 to 125 million range, might gross, you know, over time. So there's a buffer in there just because of those risks that we've been talking about. Hopefully that makes sense, Commissioner Logan.
Yeah, no, I understand. I guess I'm just concerned when we're forecasting a rate increase and we're above our reserve target. But I guess that's a decision we have still in April.
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. It's definitely a strategy, a position that we're taking and we're recommending. It's fundamentally up to the board, of course, to make that decision. If you, for example, removed the rate increase for 2022, the impact of that over this full 5 years is very large. It's like $70+ million. And so imagine just that one small rate increase dropping that end number from 186 down to 110, for example. So it does have a very large impact, even though it's a very small rate increase. That's kind of what we're trying to capture, is the smallest of increases over this period for the cumulative maximum impact, so we don't have to hit the ratepayers with something bigger. And admittedly, it's conservative because, you know, we really do view some pretty meaningful risk profile issues here, primarily power supply.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. John, are you going to say something?
I'm just going to pile onto that. Scott did a great job of articulating that. It really is about the risk, and especially as we've seen, as Scott mentioned, the power supply risk regionally and even nationally. We remember the 2019 winter event and how power prices spiked at that time. In recent last year or two, the Texas event, California event, and the volatility and the severity of market swings because of some of those events. And if you still look at where we're headed in the region, clean energy, resource adequacy, RTOs, ISOs, there's still a lot of uncertainty around power supply. So a big part of that buffer that Scott talks about, it really is factoring in that power supply risk. And then as Sarah mentioned in the slide, climate change, which actually results for us in storms and storm impacts, and we've seen the trends of increasing storms. So there's just a lot of things that we are trying to take into consideration. And again, as Scott said very well, we'd rather do the small rate increases now than try to have to make up for some of that risk that we see could potentially be even greater in the out years.
And I agree, but I would like to, when we get to the place where we're going to be acting on a rate increase, I would like to understand that. What if we don't do it? What if we do less? I just think that's important. So I understand we can pass a budget and the rate increase may change anyway, up or down from what we're forecasting. So I understand that. Thank you.
This is Commissioner Olson. I don't know if my question is appropriate for this slide. But with regard to expenses, is there any anticipation that given the way the market is, that Bonneville would find a need to trigger its CRAC?
Commissioner Olson, this is...
I'm getting dead silence.
This is Jason Ziskowski, AGM of Facilities Generation, Power Rates and Transmission. And we don't foresee that this coming year. You know, the BPA is in pretty good standing right now in their reserves. And, you know, we haven't seen the reserve surcharge. So you know, now obviously we can't completely foretell the future, but, you know, I think they're in pretty good standing right now. So certainly better than when I first joined the group. So, you know, I think they're trending in the right direction that way.
Thank you. And my second is, other parts of the country are seeing doubling, tripling of their electric rates, electric utility rates. And I'm thinking that we really aren't exposed to that because of the nature of our portfolio, correct? Any significant impact of that?
This is Garrison Marr, Senior Manager of Power Supply, and that's right. You know, the bulk of our power portfolio is made up of at-cost federal hydropower and Columbia Generating Station. We are not as exposed to the commodities markets like coal and natural gas, where, you know, other utilities that are get hit with some of that commodity volatility as well. So, you know, that's a really positive thing about who we are.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And I would also add to that on the T&D side, because we have continued to invest in our system and at the same time figuring out ways to do it faster, better, cheaper, quicker, and control costs, that has also set us up well, that our investments continue to be incremental and yet still, as we see, maintain high reliability. For the system. I mean, if you compare us to some of our local peers or regional peers, and the amount of rate increase relative to the T&D system, we are in a pretty good place.
Yeah, much really good place. Thank you.
And our poles aren't falling over and causing bridges to close.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was referring to, but didn't want to say that out loud.
Okay, Sarah, thank you.
Last slide we have is just a snapshot of our reserves as we're projecting them to be at the end of 22. We've already talked a little bit about our revenue fund, the debt management reserve as well. There's just some other reserves that we're required to keep, our sinking reserves, which are just based on our debt service schedules. Project reserves in this case are our bond funds. So this is the $77 million represents what we expect left in the 2021 bonds. And then if we do issue new money in 22, what would be left there?
Talking to myself. I apologize. I'll turn my mic off.
The contingency reserves are set aside to help mitigate some long-term risk exposure. Our bond debt service reserves, again, are kind of related to funds we have to set aside for our debt service. And then our benefit reserves are our long-term obligation that we have, that we put aside $2 million a year for.
Is that for retirees?
Long-term.
It's not our medical benefits, isn't it, retirees?
I should know the answer to this. As soon as I get off this call, I'll remember exactly what it's for. But I'll definitely make sure we get that answer to you.
It's just my curiosity. I know it exists and it's fine. So don't do it. You don't need to follow up on it.
So that is what we have on the electric system. Any further discussion or questions before I move on? Water.
I'm looking at my list.
I have no more.
I have no more either. Thank you.
I'm hoping that I don't know if Boeing's contracts, I know that they got a huge contract for a lot of 737 MAX airplanes, commercial. And so I don't know if that happens here, if that could affect our revenue but you know, like when I learn about things like that, I always try to think of it in terms of how that's going to affect us positively or negatively. And that's in the future, but it did occur to me as we're looking at the budget, if that could help on the revenue side, the wholesale accounts. Well, anyway.
Yeah, I know when they do their load forecast, they look at the most recent data that they have. And we do refresh our load forecast really often. So I'm sure that they will be staying on top of that news.
Yeah, that just was announced today.
Okay. Yeah, this is Jason. So we have assumed in our load forecast that at some point Boeing will be, you know, resuming their production and opening up all the lines again. But we don't have, specific information on exactly when that's going to happen and the load impact on that.
Right.
I wouldn't think there'd be much of an impact for us on the 737 built down in Renton. So maybe some potential small indirect, but I think by and large, we wouldn't see an impact on that from that.
Even the MAX, the 737 MAX.
Yeah.
I'm not, up on where these planes are built.
Those are down in Renton as well, I believe.
Oh, okay. Thank you, John. Good information.
That's our competitor.
All right, let's take a look at water. Similar, we'll go through some of the assumptions that are built into the five-year forecast. And some of these are a little bit of a repeat of what I discussed at the last meeting. So the water system is expecting some annual growth. And this is just the volume that they sell to their customers, approximately 2% per year. There are some placeholders for a series of small multi-year rate increases beginning in 22, which will be brought to you shortly. Wholesale sale revenues, they just reflect growth in the areas that purchase water from us, like Arlington and Granite Falls. Purchase water, does include a series of rate increases from the city of Everett. We know most of them, they range from about 1.4 to about 2.4%. And also includes an increase in purchase water because we'll have growth in our customers. O&M, there'll be a little bit of an increase as we're trying to true up some of the shared costs from the electric system, and then just normal inflation on their other items. Capital expenditures, they've got a number of projects. They also are continuing the progress on their main replacement program, and there's also some funding for the AMI project for the water meters, mostly in 2022 to 2024. Similar to what you saw at the electric system, here's a snapshot of the water system budget. So you can see similar story. We see just some really slight increase in their operating revenues to offset some of the increase in the operating expenses. The other thing I'll point out is capital expenditures. You'll notice there are some pretty significant projects coming up in the next few years. Some of these will be funded by our GFC funds, which we'll talk about in a second. And also the continuing of the Warm Beach projects is in here as well. Similar to the electric system, we're showing where we project the water system reserves to end at the end of 2022. They have similar reserves to the electric system. Their operating reserve just represents kind of their funding that's just set aside for liquidity. That's projected to be at $3.4 million. They also have sinking reserves, which are related to debt service. The project reserves, this is primarily the GFC fund, which I discussed a minute ago. And these dollars are held aside for very specific projects, in which there's some projects in our forecast which will be using these dollars. So we do expect that project reserve to be drawn down. They also do have a $1.5 million contingency reserve that they keep for mitigating risk exposure. And that is our quick forecast on water. Are there any questions on this?
Questions, commissioners?
All good.
So there is no anticipated, at least for this particular forecast, no anticipated bond issues that for the correct. Water system.
There is currently a placeholder in 2023, which will be revisited, you know, as we kind of go through next year and to see how
okay.
funding goes.
Okay.
Nothing in 2022, correct.
Thank you.
And that concludes our budget hearing. So our next steps are to provide the resolution to you and ask for adoption at the next meeting.
Hey, Jim Herling had his hand up.
Oh, I called, yeah.
Jim, is there something you wanted to say?
Oh, hello, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, welcome. Hi, yes. Jim Herling, Senior Manager of Treasury Risk Management and Supply Chain and District Treasurer. Commissioner Olson, I just wanted to circle back on that question that you had related to the benefits reserve for the electric system, and that is for the retiree health care benefits.
Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. Okay.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thanks.
Commissioner Olson, now, so next step is where is the true up then from the what was proposed and what was preliminary proposed and then some adjustments that you typically make for the final recommendation for award. Where's that?
Because we did so many of our adjustments so late in the process, we actually don't have any changes.
Oh, okay.
So the budget that we propose is the budget that we'll be asking you to adopt because we shifted our schedule a little bit.
You're not giving me anything more to crap about.
What you see is what you get.
Hey, are there any questions from the public regarding the proposed budget? If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any hands up. Are there any more questions from any of you commissioners?
No, I have no more.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Sarah. I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the proposed 2022 budget.
I move the public hearing on the 2022 proposed budget be continued to Tuesday, December 7th, 2021 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett or at a publicly noticed video conference if appropriate.
Okay, thank you. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 4B, public hearing on the 2021 IRP, 2021 CEIP, and 2022 to 2023 biannual conservation targets. I'll now convene a public hearing on the 2021 IRP, 2021 CEIP, and 2022-23 biannual conservation targets. And we have Garrison Marr here who will provide us a presentation. Good afternoon, Garrison.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thanks for having us. And, you know, it's myself supported by Jason Ziskowski, Michael Coe, Jeff Feinberg, and, you know, definitely want to shout out all the folks from across the PUD who have helped contribute to quite a few different plans that are overlapping that we'll hear about today. And this public hearing is really an opportunity to, you know, have another venue for this. And you'll see in the previous IRP and CEIP briefings that we have definitely made it a point to get out early and often on what this plan looks like through all of those previous briefings and public hearing opportunities that have come with them. So would love to give you a tour of what we have and where folks can find the full plans that look like these two cover sheets on the right and are on our brand new PUD website. We have the IRP, which is a 24-year study period, looks at what are our resource needs to meet our regulatory obligations. our load needs and keep costs very low for our customers. The Clean Energy Implementation Plan looks at a four-year slice, the next four, which is 2022 to 2026, and looks at what those actions would be. And it also involves a lot of public process on what our customers thought we should be thinking about as we pursue those actions so that we can make sure that we're not having any adverse impacts on the community. And to the extent that, you know, there could be benefits, that we are, you know, distributing those benefits equitably. And I am really happy to report that that's really more what our Clean Energy Implementation Plan was about, is measuring, you know, how those different benefits could be distributed throughout the community. Last, we're really working our way down the funnel here from 24 years, 4 years, and now to two. We need to share with you what the planned biennial conservation targets are. All of these three planning items have filing deadlines that are coming up, which is why you'll have this public hearing today. And then we'll be asking at the December 7th commission meeting for the commission to have a resolution to adopt recommended plans and targets. So that's where we are today. I know that you guys have seen this material in many ways and forms. And I know that we have a 273-page IRP and a 30-some-odd page CEIP available on the website. So we won't go into as much detail as we have in the past, but just wanted to have that refresher for everybody. This is what we'll be asking the commission to approve on December 7th via resolution. Now, I mentioned before, I have a bit of a funnel, you know, vision in my mind of how these plans overlap and interrelate with each other. The IRP really places an emphasis on that 10-year timeframe. CEIP is the 4-year, and these biennial conservation targets will be the 2-year there. And, you know, we really do take the approach just to be efficient with staff resources and make sure that we have a consistent, coherent policy, that we use the integrated resource plan to develop the broad resource strategy for the district. And, you know, the core questions that we ask are, what are the needs to satisfy regulatory obligation and load service needs? And then exploring what are the best combination of options that are available to deliver affordable, reliable, and environmentally sustainable service. And then once we've arrived at that, when can we get them and what does that look like? We put that all together and it gives us the IRP, which also gives us the 10-year Clean Energy Action Plan. We have the 4-year view, but that's the separate filed Clean Energy Implementation Plan. And then as we get into implementation altogether, we've got those conservation acquisition targets that we'll go after, price signals that can help us fine tune things like demand response pilots and all the things that we may do in the next 4 years to get ready. And then also give us that clear regulatory and policy compliance pathway to help us make sure that we're meeting all of our obligations. And it should be no surprise, especially to the commission, that we really placed an emphasis on an extensive engagement process. And when we started, we thought, what does a customer-centric IRP process look like and how can we get there? So, you know, we really endeavored to work with our customers a lot during this process. The pandemic did make it difficult to do that at times, but as you look at these bullet points of touch bases with the commission and the public, you know, you probably see a lot more volume than anything that we've done in the past. So, you know, we scoped the IRP collaboratively with our customers. We surveyed during the initial stages of the IRP process. Had 5 commission briefings for each of the 5 phases that we broke the IRP into. And then we wrapped it up with the 3-hour extravaganza on October 26th, where we really looked at everything all together and made sure that, you know, there was clear visibility into what the IRP was looking at. On the CEIP side, we did residential surveying, focus groups, ensuring that we had a mix of customers that were in income qualified programs and customers from throughout the service territory, had an open house, and then we also had two commission briefings just on the CEIP itself. So we've really, really made sure that folks knew what was in these plans so that we could be successful here, being comfortable with them as we move forward. And these are the highlights. These are the key takeaways, and these should be no surprises, but you know, our long-term resource strategy really says that in order to meet our future needs cost-effectively for our customers, you know, we want to add conservation, develop demand response, acquire or develop long-duration energy storage, and add some small local solar energy. And those are the four legs of the stool that will get us from where we are today to where we want to be to meet our customers' load service needs, CETA, carbon regulations that are headed our way, and to rise to the challenge of some of the future changes in the market around us. And you know, those opportunities and key takeaways look like an early track to 100% clean for CETA, which is a big financial opportunity for our customers and a great goal for the PUD. We also are looking at long-term resource additions that generate no carbon, which is a big deal and a great thing. And, you know, it could also be considered that some of these resources that we're planning for could actually reduce regional carbon. So not only are we generating no carbon, but we could be helping the greater Pacific Northwest grid. You might ask, how is this possible? What do you mean? And I would say that, you know, one of the things that has happened with increasing frequency is renewable curtailment. When renewable energy on the grid exceeds what transmission lines can move in a given period of time, the storage resources that we're envisioning could help reduce or mitigate some of that renewable curtailment by providing additional demand and a place to sink some of that renewable energy. And that could have a positive carbon impact. The plan itself is affordable, reliable, clean, and flexible. The way that we measure that is with our planning standards and with the risk analysis that we showed on October 26th. And we also think that this plan helps set the district up for some of the key challenges and opportunities that we'll have in the future. Some of those include post-2028 BPA contract, which you know is both a risk and an opportunity for us. Resource adequacy needs and the program that's developing that we're participants in today, the potential for future markets and having resources that could effectively participate in those markets, rising to the challenge of electrification and climate change, which we heard from our customers, they want us to proactively plan for. So we have included forecasts of what that looks like, both in terms of load and the impact of climate change on our generating resources like hydropower. So we think that you know the plan that we have checks the boxes on a lot of the things that we've heard from this commission and from our customers.
Harrison, we have a few of our customers watching today, and I wanted you to clarify small when you're talking about small solar. It's small maybe relative to very large scale solar, but it's not small compared to like our community solar project we've already done, correct?
Yeah, that's a great question, Commissioner Logan. So small in this context means 5 megawatts. And if we think about that in relationship to the community solar at the Arlington microgrid, 5 megawatts would be 10 times that size. So it is not small, you know, can you fit it in a bread box, but it is small compared to the solar farms in Eastern Washington that folks, you know, may drive by from time to time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, these are the big picture elements of the plan. I did want to just as a reminder and for, you know, any folks from the public that are dialing in today, just give a quick context for how these show up in the filed plans. And of course, all the details are on our website in those draft plans and are available for folks to take a look at. So starting with the IRP, you know, one of the first things to know is that, you know, our forecast of future load and our resource generation means that we do need to do something at the PUD to ensure that we're meeting our customers' needs into the future. And this is what those needs look like. So in blue, that's the energy need. You can see it moves up and down. That's due to the seasonality of load and our generation profile. And in orange, that's the additional capacity need within the month that's needed to help us better match some of our load and generation. And you can see three basic causalities for the increase in scale over time. The first one to know is, you know, this is all before new conservation. And if we did no conservation, we would have load growth. We, of course, are planning for conservation, which mitigates a lot of what you're seeing in blue there. The other thing to know is that some of our wind contracts that were entered into in the 2008 to 2009 period are due for retirement starting in 2024 and ending in 2029. As those energy resources come off of our portfolio, it does create a little bit of incremental need left behind. What we're finding in our studies is that conservation can really cost effectively meet a lot of that need. Then as we get into our new post-2028 BPA contract, a contract that we don't know a lot about today in 2021, you know, we are anticipating, you know, that there could be some headwinds there that we need to plan for. We've talked about what those look like, but, you know, there's a risk mitigation strategy at play here. And, you know, we want to make sure that we have enough resources to serve our customers. So that's that middle period there in the late 2020s to the mid 2030s. After that, and even thinking about our existing BPA construct and contract, you know, there's a ceiling for all BPA contracts, after which we are no longer eligible for tier one or at cost BPA power. And we want to have a proactive plan to meet that gap. And that's really what 2035 to 2045 is all about, is mitigating that risk of being out there outside of BPA tier one power, making sure that we have a plan for our customers. So this is an energy and a capacity need.
Garrison, though, I guess in your statement, we're assuming that we might not have some influence in terms of negotiations in how that allocation is, that allocation capping out is structured.
That's a great question, Commissioner Olson. You know, there's a couple ways to think about it. One is, you know, the federal system size has been changing pretty dramatically over the last period of time. And that's something that we don't have a lot of control over, but that we need to proactively plan for. And is, you know, just a high level number for us to think about to capture that scale change. We've seen the federal system size in previous years, call it 5-6 years ago, in and around 7,200 average megawatts. And we're down to 6,700 now.
Yeah. Okay.
If we lost additional resources in that BPA portfolio, there'd be additional headwinds for us to manage. Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is, you know, the need expressed in energy and capacity terms. And we know from the regulatory perspective that we want the resources to meet this need to be carbon free and to help us with CETA and future carbon legislation. And when we ran the numbers and looked at the available resources that could help us with these things out across a number of different scenarios that our customers helped us establish and define, we found some pretty stable results. We saw a bridge contract for capacity from the market. This is the same thing that we have and have had today to help us with the winter. We saw the development for long duration energy storage being a key pillar, conservation being a huge part of what we would do, the development of demand response in purple here being an important part of what we do, and contingent upon load growth or policy changes, you know, the potential for a renewable energy resource in some cases to have value for us. So we definitely see that potential in some very specific cases, but you know, by and large, most of these had the other stools.
Yeah.
You, Commissioner Olson, you just brought it up that we don't know exactly what that post-2028 contract looks like in this IRP cycle. We always have this two-year update that we do. And in that update, we think we'll have a lot better information and we'll refine this. But we think that this is a really good foundation for the plan and will help us, you know, kind of irrespective of some of the wiggle that that BPA contract could have.
And I do like, Garrison, that I'm seeing more emphasis here on taking a proactive approach in terms of identifying energy storage capability. It's kind of been hanging out there for years and years and years, and I get a sense from this particular plan that considerable attention is going to be given to that option because that allows us to do a number of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you'll see what that looks like when we get into the action plan you know, we will have a plan of attack there and we will be in contact with the commission as we move through it. So that previous slide showed that across these scenarios, we had a similar strategy. And you know, we are proposing that the base case is the basis of our long-term resource strategy. That gives us specific scales and timing for the pillars of this, you know, resource addition strategy that we talked about before. And in these highlighted boxes here, you can see some of the relevant timeframes for the regulatory filings and how those numbers would flow through them. So we'll talk later today, really just a couple minutes, I promise, about the biennial conservation targets. And this is the basis of the 7.96, right? That is part of the long-term resource plan and helps us get to these other years. In the CEIP, that plan includes our demand response targets in our four-year conservation targets. So that's why that's referenced in that document. If we move over to the IRP, that requires us to have a 10-year clean energy action plan with numbers targeted for that time period. And that's why, you know, these numbers, all from the same long-term resource strategy, are the ones relevant to that element of our regulatory filings. So it's all together, it's all one thing. You know, it's just the timestamps that these different plans require give us these slightly different numbers here.
Garrison, what I appreciate from this graphic is that we are working to not rely on the market for reliability. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Logan. You've got a plan. So, you know, that was our energy needs before. And we said, you know, it was very important to us that they, you know, be carbon-free resources to help us rise to the challenge of the policy environment and take that head on. And so we did want to give, you know, just another refresher review on, you know, how it helps us there. And if you take a look at the graph on the left, that's our CETA outlook. That area, kind of in a, gosh, it looks like brown or gray to me, I'm not sure which, but that chart on the left, that would be our CETA eligible generation. So hydropower, CGS, wind, all the things that we have. And that green line would be our retail load. So the big takeaway is when CETA becomes binding in 2030, our eligible generation is far in exceedance of our retail load, which is the fundamental question that CETA asks us to have an answer for. Mm-hmm. On the I-937, also known as the Energy Independence Act, on the graph at the right, you know, there are different compliance methodologies, and our graph by and large shows that we would use a combination of those methodologies to comply with that law at the lowest possible cost for our customers. So we have abundant renewable resources. We have a lot of different pathways that we could take. And it's important, you know, for the commissioners to know that conservation is providing huge value for us here as well. Some of these years with limited target RECs for I-937, which is the black line, is the result of no load growth strategy implementation that helps us bank and preserve some of our REC inventory for future years. And that provides a big financial value to the PUD, and it's something that we get from conservation acquisition to keep our load flatter and more manageable. So those are the highlights mechanically about what we would do to implement the long-term resource strategy. The action plan is not a regulatory requirement, but is a PUD norm that we've established that gives the commission a little bit of fidelity on how we would do that. So the first one's pretty self-explanatory, but we would pursue all cost-effective conservation. That's in line with current practices and with the great staff we have to accomplish that. The second is to pursue acquisition of significant long-duration utility scale storage to help meet the district's need. And what you're not seeing there is a specific technology referenced at a specific scale. Really, what this would do is direct staff to perform a thorough due diligence process, keep the commission informed about the results of that process, and come back with a recommendation for how we can meet that energy storage target. So that commission has their fingerprints on that as well. That's by design, and you know, I think that'll help us be successful in getting to a place that we're all comfortable with. Number three is developing the roadmap to scale in that significant lowest cost demand response programs for our customers that can leverage AMI and help us meet the challenges of capacity into the future at a low cost and by providing some additional distribution system value. So we know that we have some pilots out there that are, you know, in development. We want to learn from those and grow to scale in constant communication with our customers to make sure that the programs that are developed meet their needs and exceed their expectations. So that's the approach that we would propose. And this would be another opportunity for us to come back to the commission, show what that plan looks like and how it aligns and leverages the AMI investment. There are additional pieces that, you know, are also in the IRP document that we may not go into all the detail here, but they give you an idea of what staff thinks is important for us to rise to the challenges of the future. We are doing increasing geospatial modeling of conservation, which helps us derive more benefit for the distribution system. And we want to continue that.
I was just going to say, I think number six down here is what Commissioner Olson was concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely, Commissioner Wolf. And that's part of the game plan here and part of what we think will be really important. You know, we want to stay on top of the latest and greatest in climate change modeling. We want to be leaders in the resource adequacy program development effort. And we also want to be at the table advocating for our customers in regional forums, discussing the formation of organized markets. We think by pursuing these activities, we'll be able to better inform future resource plans, be great stewards of customer resources, and plan proactively for the future. So that's the IRP. Switching gears to the CEIP and really hitting the highlights here. You know, you're going to see the clean energy representation in that document here at a high level. And we talked about it before, but in general, we have more clean energy than we have retail load. So you can see that on the graph at the left. And, you know, that's the basis for our understanding today, that we are at 100% now in a good position to be 100% in the future by 2030 when that compliance obligation becomes binding. And we are still in rulemaking for what this looks like, but the draft rules from the UTC and from Commerce both reflect this perspective. Now, again, we talked about the first 4 years of the long-term resource plan really being what's reflected in that CEIP. And you can see that again in this chart, which is just that more narrow timestamp. And specifically looking at conservation and demand response as being the planned actions in the next 4 years that would be a requirement to report under the CEIP. We also worked with our customers to assess the impacts to highly impacted communities, which is identified by the Washington State Department of Health, and to identify vulnerable populations that are all identified by the utility as a result of a public process. And where we landed there was our customers identified energy cost burden customers, or folks who their energy costs are 7% or more of their income, as being a vulnerable population that we want to make sure that we are measuring impacts and benefits to as we implement the plan. And customers in a distribution system constrained area, which would be customers of all types, residential customers, small businesses, and the like, on circuits that have limited capacity and where some of the demand side resources that we're planning for, like conservation and demand response, may alleviate some congestion on those circuits and provide a benefit. So that's what we heard, and what's in that plan. We are looking to measure the plan's forecast effects and measured effects by looking at the geospatial data that we have developed for conservation so that we know how much planned distribution system constraint relief will be available as a result of pursuing conservation, and tracking energy cost burden customers that participate in energy efficiency programs to help us know how we're doing on that front. So we think that's a really practical way that that planned conservation activity can help reduce some of those energy costs. And that's really, kind of the short version of the CEIP, which has all of the data behind this. In 33 pages, I believe, on our website. And I'd love to hand it off to Jeff Feinberg in Energy Services to help take us home and talk about our biennial conservation targets that are part of the plans we talked about just before.
Thanks, Garrison. This is Jeff Feinberg, Manager of Market Segments in Energy Services, and representing all the folks in energy services that bring that great value-rich conservation to all these plans as well. And so on the next slide, we are just going to share very briefly about our biennial conservation targets for 22 and 23. And just a small reminder that when we look at these targets and we develop them, that both, we're thinking about what's technical, what's achievable, and what's economic. And that's what feeds into these results. And so with that, our biennial target is 7.96 average megawatts cumulative at bus bar. And that this amount is consistent with the IRP and the CEIP. And just for context, this is slightly down a little bit from our current biennium that we're wrapping up here this year in 2021. But you'll recall back from slide 10, you can kind of see over time that where this current, next biennium is a little bit smaller, it ramps back up in 2 years to really where we're at for this current biennium. And then on beyond that, 5 years on into the future, there's actually quite a need for conservation. And so we're excited about kind of some of the different challenges and opportunities that kind of puts in front of us as a team. And while it's not the subject of what we're currently presenting on, I do want to note, because something I'm really excited about is as we look to wrap up the current biennium, we do have our target well in hand. And I share that to say, I'm just so proud of our energy services team for delivering that in a global pandemic, no less. And also, that's not something that all of our regional peers can necessarily say. And so I'm just really proud of the work that the team's done to make sure that we get to that target. And I say that to say that though the next biennium is a little bit smaller target, as we look and see what some of those targets are 6 years out, 10 years out, and they're quite substantial, we have all confidence that our team will get us there, and we're excited about that challenge. And so with that, I'll pass the mic back to Garrison to wrap us up here.
And Jeff, if I'm correct, we've exceeded our target in many years. So great work that your team has been doing.
Thank you. And you know, you'll recall also that where that is beneficial also in exceeding that target is if we did need to have that rollover that we can draw off of because we were going to come in underneath our target, we would actually be able to leverage that and access that to help us meet target. So it is always nice for us to carry over a little bit extra. And so that's always in our team's mind as we think about what achievement we're delivering. So thank you.
Jeff, Commissioner Olson, so you said you will have the challenge soon down the road of dealing the challenge of the planned substantial increase. What is that? We're now at 7.96, 22, 23. So what is substantial? Tell me.
You want to go back to maybe a former slide if possible?
Okay.
Well, and I want to say maybe slide number 10 possibly might capture it the best.
This one so might do it, Jeff. What do you think?
Yeah. So this is kind of a four-year snapshot there. And so you can see where it's 7.96 for the next biennium. But then after that, you can see it's about kind of in 11 average megawatt kind of range, which is more akin to what we've had here in 20 and 21.
Then
when we get beyond that, it goes up quite a bit. Now, a lot of that has to do with just the changing market conditions. Just like the reason that the target's gone down a little bit over the next 2 years, it has to do with the changes in residential lighting measures that are available and shower heads and those things coming out of the marketplace. So we're kind of always shifting a little bit to what is available to us and also, right, what is also economic and makes the most sense at the time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I have a question. I've heard from different sources that our load growth for this region is flat. Mm-hmm. Projected load growth. And I don't know how far that goes out, but what do you think about that? What do you say about that?
You know,
do you disagree with it?
There's a pretty good diversity of load growth patterns, you know, throughout the Pacific Northwest. So some communities are growing, you know, pretty quickly. You know, some of the communities in Eastern Washington are growing a little faster. And some of the communities in Western Washington that have also implemented quite a bit of conservation. So that's what we've seen in the recent past, you know, in the forecast for the next couple years here. But the big wild card is going to be electrification and electric vehicles. And, you know, that could really change what these trajectories look like. It's one of the reasons that we wanted to proactively plan for that in this IRP, because that could be an important source of load growth that we want to make sure that we have, you know, under control and well managed. So depending on your projection of electric vehicle adoption and electrification, you could probably come up with some pretty different assumptions for what future load growth could look like.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, great. Well, that is really all we have today. So where we would go from here, you know, of course, after public comments and, you know, with these documents out on our website, would be to a December 7th commission meeting where we would ask the commission to consider a resolution to adopt the IRP which is out there in draft form, the CEIP, which is out there in draft form, and then the biennial conservation target, which, you know, we would kind of formalize in that resolution that we would bring to you on the 7th.
Great. Are there any questions from the public regarding the presentation? If so, please raise your hand. Not see any hands up. Any more questions or comments from you commissioners?
No, I think we've asked a lot, quite a few.
All right. Well, thank you, Garrison, and thank you, Jeff, for the cameo appearance.
Great, thank you.
I will call for a motion to continue the public hearing on the 2021 IRP, the 2021 CEIP, and the 22-23 biennial conservation targets.
I move the public hearing on the 2021 IRP, 2021 CEIP, and the 2022-23 biennial conservation targets be continued to Tuesday, December 7th, 2021 at 1:30 p.m. at 2320 California Street in Everett or at a publicly noticed video conference if appropriate.
Thank you. I'll now call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next, we have more public hearings. We're on item 5. These are public hearings with action. First, we have 5A, disposal of surplus property for the fourth quarter of 2021. I'll call for a motion.
Based on staff's recommendation that—
Commissioner Logan, can we just note that this is a supplement to the earlier one?
I'm sorry. It's the disposal of surplus property fourth quarter 2021 supplement. I'll call for a motion.
Thank you. Based on staff's recommendation that the items are no longer necessary or useful to the district, I move that those items listed on Exhibit A of the surplus property recommendation report be declared surplus and be sold for high bid or disposed of according to policy in the fourth quarter of 2021.
Okay, thank you. I'll now convene a public hearing on the disposal of surplus property fourth quarter 2021 supplement. We have HUD Allworth available to answer any questions. Are there any questions from the public regarding the surplus property equipment or supplement? Please raise your hand. Not seeing any hands going up. Are there any questions or comments from the commission?
I have none.
I have none.
Okay, then I'll close the public hearing and I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next, item 6, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution adopting a plan or system of additions to and extensions of the district's water utility, declaring the intention of the Board of Commissioners to form Water Local Utility District Number 64 to carry out that plan and fixing the date, time, and place for a public hearing on formation of the proposed local utility district and confirmation of the assessment role. I will call for a motion.
Move approval.
All right, we have Christina Arndt, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, I'm sure I am,
okay,
available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? I'm not, if so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any hands going up. Are there any comments or questions?
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm playing around with muting my mic because someone out front is got a thing roaring away. Is this the non-contiguous one?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners?
I have none.
I have none either. We've seen this before. All right. Thank you, Christina. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item 6B, consideration of a resolution authorizing the CEO General Manager of Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County to execute Amendment Number 2 to an interlocal agreement with Snohomish County regarding weatherization of low-income residences. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
All right. We have Kevin Wade here available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding the resolution? If so, please raise your hand. I'm not seeing any hands up. Are there any questions or comments from the commission?
No, not from me.
Oh.
No? Okay. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item C, settlement of a claim. I'll call for a motion.
I move to approve the proposed settlement of the damage claim of the City of Everett in accordance with the terms and conditions set forth in the confidential memorandum from Assistant General Counsel for the District to the CEO General Manager, dated November 4th, 2021.
Are there any questions or comments, commissioners?
No.
Okay, I'll call. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say I have no questions.
Okay, thank you. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item D, settlement of a claim. I'll call for a motion.
Just a minute. Let's see, just 1 second. Would you repeat that, please, Commissioner Logan?
This is for item D. I'm calling for a motion. I'll go ahead and make the proposed motion.
Thank you. Thank you.
I move that the commission approve final settlement in the matter of Wall versus Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County on the terms and conditions set forth in the confidential memorandum from the Assistant General Counsel to the CEO General Manager dated November 12, 2021. Are there any questions or comments, commissioners?
I have no more. No.
None.
Okay. I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Next is item C, or 7, sorry, our CEO General Manager report. You have a report for us today, John.
I do have some good things to share, and I'll try to be brief since we still have some things to cover. First, out of our distribution and engineering group, Andrew Jarday, is our first mechanic trainee in transportation that has successfully completed the program that beginning after 4 years, and he is now a utility journeyman level technician with
wow.
full support of the team. That training program was stood up approximately 4 years ago, and by approval of the commission, is now a successful program in place, and we hope to begin another trainee shortly. So that's, again, a huge kudos to mm-hmm. all the folks that are involved in standing up those types
yeah.
of apprentice and or trainee programs.
And that's the fleet transportation?
Yes.
Did you say? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. from our general counsel and DIG office, some good stuff. We began rolling out the HQ, which is a new matter tracker system for our legal department, and developed a new records management training program to be released by the end of the year. And our data privacy program, the deletion of approximately 400,000 PII records, which are personally identifiable information records, such as date of birth, social security number, driver's license number, in SAP production, impacting approximately 200,000 district customers. All PII records related to those elements have been deleted in non-production environments. And the update and publishing of a district's external privacy policy. and data governance, completion of our data governance pilot. This was a program to apply our new data governance strategy to GIS data as a pilot for applying to governance across a number of other data domains. The next domain to tackle will be our customer contact information data. And also obsolete database retirement. Worked with different groups within the district to coordinate and manage the shutdown and retirement of several obsolete databases and associated DBMS and server environments, most notably our CISOV and Passport. These represent significant reduction in old redundant data, reduced risk and cost to the district. Mm-hmm. In our customer energy service, our aging debt, our total debt aged over 90 days has dropped by almost 20% since August of this year, with a $2.7 million reduction in just a little over 2 months. The number of customers eligible for disconnect also dropped by 15%. This is outstanding work by our customer service team, and our CSRs have been working with customers both with proactive outreach on high balances. Our field CSRs are out leaving doorknob tags. Payment arrangements are focused on helping customers while also getting partial or full payments. And we expect to see this trend continuing over the coming weeks. The Everett Transit System, we met with the Community Transit and Everett Transit at Seaway at the Seaway Transit Center regarding the specifics of the siting the induction charging equipment. This is one of three sites, Seaway, Everett Station, and College Station, made possible by grant funding awarded to Everett Transit. These induction charging projects are using the same equipment being used with the induction charging project RPUD is helping to fund through the CEF3 grant. This brings us to a total of four induction charger projects for Everett Transit. That is just super cool. We had 83 new solar applicants in October, and that's compared to a normal of about 33 new apps per month. Kind of unusual in this particular month, but that's good news. We also had our first ever Flex Energy event on November 5th from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. I know I had the opportunity to engage with that, and I actually had my wife turn our thermostat down and put off doing laundry. And then she said, well, if I have to put it off, then you can do it later. So I'm not sure. Great for me. But no hiccups or issues raised. And the next event will likely be by the end of this week. And lastly, in our facilities, generation, power rates, and transmission group, the generation staff successfully completed a one-week shutdown of the Jackson project, during which they replaced the project's 1984 vintage variable water withdrawal control system, which controls water with water withdrawal from Spader Lake Reservoir. The new control system will allow remote operation of the inlet panel positions within the intake tower, which are used to select the desired water temperature for release at Comeback Dam, the Diversion Dam, and the Jackson Powerhouse under the project's water temperature conditioning strategy. All generating units were returned to service on schedule. Now we have the more extensive two-week outage still planned for the Jackson project, scheduled for late March of next year. And the district's two-week virtual WEC audit started November 8th. Standard leads and subject matter experts have been responding to data requests and participating in interviews with the WEC auditors. And I know I've gotten an update and the team is just doing an outstanding job as they always do with the current WEC audit. So that's all I have, unless there are questions or comments.
John, the two-week outage up at Jackson, is that for the valve replacement? It's out ahead.
I think that's, but if Jason is on,
there he is.
He can find that better.
Here he is.
Yes, that's correct, Commissioner Wolf, and that's planned for next March.
Right.
That's we'll also do a walkthrough of the power tunnel and, you know, various other maintenance activities.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Jason.
Yes, you're welcome.
Any other questions for John or comments?
No.
Oh, impressive work. It's wonderful that CSRs are working with our customers to get that arrearage down. And so
Yeah. Lots of cool things going on.
Yeah. All right. Next is item 8, commission business. 8A, commission reports. Are there any reports, commissioners?
Well, we do have a report on the owner linkage plan.
Well, that's coming up. We're going to have a...
Oh, to the calendar. I always...
No, this is actually a report for each of us individually.
Oh, thank you. I think I might be getting tired. commission reports. I don't think I have anything out of the ordinary.
Okay. Commissioner Olson, any reports?
No.
Okay. I have none either. Next is item 8B, our commissioner event calendar. Are there any changes to the event calendar, commissioners?
Not for me. Mm-mm.
We have the customer breakfast tomorrow. Is that right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see any changes either. Okay. Next is item C, Snohomish County PUD Board Linkage Owner Plan. And Melissa Collins is here to facilitate this presentation.
Okay. Making sure I'm not used to being on this side of the table. excuse me. Good afternoon. I'm Melissa Collins, Commission Executive Services Director. And at the request of the commissioners, we're here to discuss the board owner linkage plan. A little bit of background about the current plan. It was adopted in 2000, and it was created from the request of former Commissioner Kathy Vaughn. She attended a conference and requested that the board at that time work on and adopt the Carver model. The board owner linkage plan was a requirement of the Carver model and was not developed by the board. The plan outlines an involvement model based on Carver that offers a variety of ways for owners to learn about the PUD policy issues, convey input, and get to know their elected commissioners. So why are we here? In early 2020, at the beginning of the pandemic, the board had a discussion about sending out communications to our customers. The board at that time asked staff to review the current plan. And we also met with each commissioner separately to gather common themes, as well as the commissioner's individual visions. So the next few slides will outline some areas that are currently in the board owner linkage plan. So looking at the current plan, there are three key messages. Keep owners informed on what a PUD is, who the commissioners are, how they can participate in the PUD process, keeping our owners informed on benefits of public power and on current issues affecting the future of the utility. The three primary objectives that are also in the current board owner linkage plan include clarify values, keep owners informed, and build strong relationships. As part of that current plan, there are also challenges. The inherent challenge is to connect with PUD owners in ways that are most meaningful to them in order to develop policies and set direction that meet and exceed their expectations. Wanting our customers to understand the utility and be proud of the utility that they own, and only a few of our customers take time to attend commission meetings, but at the same time, they want to know what is going on. I'm just having, so throughout the year, the commissioners attend various activities around our communities. We have from chamber meetings to various utility conferences. Most of the activities currently are not taking place or are regularly scheduled due to the pandemic. And hopefully in 2022, the commissioners will have an opportunity to attend some more of these great activities. This is a list of our local chambers of commerce around the county. And this slide is an example of current commissioner online presence via social media, commission meeting information, the commission meeting agendas, which also appear on the district's website. The commissioners are also featured in various publications throughout the year, which include photos and a message. Some examples are the PUD calendar, the annual report, the fall current, and the commission regular meeting agendas are also published in the Everett Herald. So moving on to some customer satisfaction JD Power results. Based on customer satisfaction and JD Power results, we know from our customers that they are happy with the utility. 90% of our customers are satisfied to very satisfied with the work that we do. Our owners want their reliability to stay high, and based on JD Power results, we scored an 816 in this area in 2020, with the industry average being 788. Most of our customers want to know what is happening with their utility and get the most information through the bill stuffer or e-newsletter. Most customers view the PUD as being trustworthy and responsive, and customers rated us an 8 out of 10 in being trustworthy and easy to do business with. So a few weeks ago, John, myself, and Allison interviewed each of you commissioners. And during these interviews, we heard some common themes: build stronger relationships with our communities, continue to strengthen ties with our community leaders, be more visible, educate our customers about who the board is and what their role is, identify areas where the board's engagement brings value, and develop a new separate board engagement plan that exists outside of the current board owner linkage plan. So a few things for the board to consider today. Do the current board activities provide any value? What additional opportunities should be considered? What's working now? What's not working? Should the board continue with the current board owner linkage plan? Or should the board create a new document, such as a board engagement plan, which would define the philosophy around board engagement, guiding principles, guidelines, which would include commissioner roles and expectations, engagement activities, and objectives, expected targeted results. So that's the end of my presentation. I'm gonna open it up now so the board can have a discussion and provide some guidance on moving forward or possible next steps. Thank you.
Well, you know, as I reread the document, I realized it's called a board owner linkage plan, but it's really mostly a utility owner linkage plan. It's really predominantly the work that Julie Cunningham and her team are doing to educate our citizens about what's going on in the PUD. So I thought that was interesting. I think the idea of us having retiring the board order linkage plan and us having an engagement plan makes a lot of sense, so that we can be clear on what we're doing. And frankly, I'm comfortable with what we're doing and the level of which we're doing it. I know I certainly find a lot of value in going to the various chambers that I go to, and there's been a few that I haven't been able to go to recently because of COVID, but I've been going to the Camino Island, the Stanwood, the Arlington, the Smoky Point, one, and the Marysville ones on a pretty regular basis.
I think that respectfully, Commissioner Logan, the board is not the same as Court Pum.
I didn't say it was, Commissioner Wolf.
Well, if you look back at what you did say, what I heard was that you thought that the department that Julie Cunningham runs does everything we need. Well, I mean, I won't put words into your mouth, but what I heard pretty much was that we don't need anything for the board per se.
That's absolutely not what I said. I said first.
Okay, let me repeat
what I said. I said, first of all, what's in the current board owner linkage plan is mostly utility owner linkage plan. It's mostly about the communication about what's going on in the utility to our customers. Then I said, secondly, I thought there was benefit in us having a board engagement plan.
I beg your pardon. I misunderstood you.
Thank you.
Oh, I agree that we need to have a board engagement plan. I would support that, and I would be happy to work on it.
Commissioner Olson, do you have thoughts on?
I do. Well, first of all, I hope we can come to some very clear direction back to staff in terms of next steps on this. I agree with the, I liked that board engagement plan. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the bullets under there, those are some basic issues that those the board has been dealing with for 2 or 3 years that we haven't really come to a consensus on what the answers to those things are. So I had thought that possibly, and the board has said multiple times that we're going to, you know, have some retreat or workshops to address some of these things. And I see these, the need to, we must get that done before we could develop any kind of a philosophy. So I like the idea of an engagement plan as a step, well, whether you call it engagement or whatever, a step one would be continuing what we're doing, expanding those opportunities in terms of engagement within the in the community, kind of one track. And if we want to go to the other track, I think we need to do some more base work before we even begin to attempt that. I agree.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
And additionally, commissioners, if I was looking at what's in there now, it's really an instruction manual out of Carver, but the board was cranky back then, so they didn't really, they threw it in staff's lap. And also, if you look at the front part of that in the Carver model book, it picks up on what Sid was saying. The board's plan needs to be strategic and long-term. What's in the current policy is not. It's more ongoing. I mean, there are strategic things that of course, the utility does, but a lot of those things in the plan are more near-term rather than strategic. So again, I came to the thought of let's work with what we are doing. Let's expand those opportunities. And then if we feel that we really need to go into something that really states the board's philosophy, we can agree upon our job on behalf of the owners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that be done either with or after the board has its next workshops on addressing some of our unresolved issues.
It's fine with fine with me.
I concur.
Yeah.
And I would just add a little color commentary onto to both Commissioner Olson and really each of your comments. Under the common themes and what resonated for me in the interviews and the discussions was, and the top two bullet points I think capture it well in that common themes, build stronger relationships within our communities and continue to strengthen ties with other community leaders. All of that really embraces and aligns with our overall strategic plan. and how we want to be a good community partner. We want to be seen in the by the community and certainly by our customers, ratepayers, as the utility that they're proud of, that we are a good community partner, we're engaged in the community. And I think the board can play and should play a role in that. And that's part of defining, I think, what those further, as Commissioner Olson had said, and I think, again, each of you had said, what those opportunities are beyond what are in place now. But to have those clearly articulated and around the value that they bring to, you know, the utility and certainly in support of the commissioner's connection with our customers, I think that's important.
I think one of the comments that I made, and I just wanted to repeat it here, is that what we have now is really not a plan. It's just a linkage guidance. It's a guidance document. And that's why I agree with my other two commissioners, that we do need the board engagement plan. And if you feel that we need to wait until we can meet face-to-face to develop a better understanding of each person's philosophy or perspective it's really not so much a philosophy as it is our perspective around board engagement. I've been trying to also do a little research into what other board members in our region do in terms of engaging with their communities, their owners in the public utility districts. And I'd like to continue doing that. And then I think I'll have more to contribute if and when we can have a meeting face-to-face, or even, I mean, a lot of the groups in our PUD are having small groups virtually just with three or four people. I don't see why we couldn't possibly do that, but if you're not comfortable with that, I'd be willing to wait until we can meet face-to-face.
Okay, any other comments, commissioners? I think we have
let's summarize, because we kind of agree on something, but let's summarize what the direction back to staff is.
I was just going to do that. So I think the direction to staff is to hold until such time as the commissioners can have a workshop to work on this and other differences or challenges we have in working together, our own board policies, and talk about the essential elements of a, what are we calling this? We're calling this a engagement plan.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, I agree with that. But also looking for opportunities in what we're doing today for other opportunities that would create value for the utility and our customers.
Mm-hmm. You know, interestingly, the pandemic has created opportunities and taken opportunities away. We've had the opportunity to participate in a lot of things this year, all the Economic Alliance events. I've done some virtual chambers. I don't know if you two are going to chambers or not, or mm-hmm. have been able to. I find it very valuable. I find it a great way to get out and meet with members of the community, and I think it's something that staff sometimes can go to those, but mostly they're too busy to go to those. So I think it is a place where we can add value.
So. Yeah, I agree. Also, the EASC is important.
Yeah. Okay. So, anything else, Melissa or John, that you need from us?
So just for clarity, we are in essence a holding pattern until such time that we can do a in-person workshop / meeting to continue the work on this.
Yes. So let's save these slides, and when we'll look at them again when we're in a workshop.
Got it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa and John, for pulling this together.
Thank you.
Great job, Melissa.
Is there any further business to come before the board today?
Have we done our planning calendar yet?
Oh, you're right. We haven't. Thank you. So next is item 9, our governance planning calendar. 9A, our governance planning calendar. Any changes to the planning calendar? And I'm going to have to pull it up here so I can see. And we have a strategy workshop on the 16th, a special meeting.
On the 16th?
Mm-hmm. December 16th.
That's been on there for a while, and the date was confirmed with the board a few months ago.
So we don't have anything on the morning of the 21st at this point, other than the sort of routine. Do we anticipate that changing?
Unknown at this time.
Okay. Any changes to the governance planning calendar?
No,
I don't have any.
Okay. Thank you for catching that, Commissioner Olson. Is there any further business to come before the board than today?
I have none.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, then it is now hearing none. It is 3:26 p.m. and our meeting is adjourned. Be in good health and hope you enjoy a great holiday.